We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Well, good afternoon. It's happened again. It's Friday. How exciting it is to welcome Michael Harrison back to our airwaves here on WTIC. Hey there, Michael.
Hello, Todd. How are you?
Rocking and rolling and psyched for the weekend, but I never make any plans. Do you plan your weekend in advance? Is it like, you know, two-hour blocks, different activity, different destination?
No. Occasionally I have a plan, I mean, for something that I have to do, but I don't generally make plans for the weekend. And again, you know, this is 2020. Life is not usual or normal.
Planable.
Yeah, it's very, you know, what we're going to do, go someplace, you know. It's, you know, where we're going to go. What are you going to do? There's not much to do when you think about it.
Well,
in terms
of the things we did. We've put the restaurant piece back in, not to the extent, but we've got, you know, we've got some places we like to go. And there's some great dining to do. And why not be out there eating? So, but the trouble is my wife, she goes through these waves of how she feels about it. So there'll be like a 2-week period where she thinks we've got to be out at every restaurant. And then she'll suddenly hear a story on TV. Like this morning they were pushing on the morning shows the idea that somebody did research that shows that people who have come down with COVID are more likely to have been at a restaurant in the previous 14 days. Now, that suggests that maybe restaurants could be contributing to people getting sick, or that restaurants are a signal. People going out to eat at restaurants puts them in a category of risk takers that's different from people who don't go to restaurants.
Oh, boy, you can make yourself crazy. Yeah.
She hears a story like that, and then she's off. We shouldn't be going to restaurants. I say, how come? Well, they've got ventilation or something, and it spreads the virus.
It's true that you have more chance of getting it if you're in a place. Now, I don't know what ventilation means. I mean, ventilation moves the air around. So I guess those little buggers.
Well, that could carry viruses.
They're surfers. They're going, wee, there's air conditioning here. Here, there's Todd Feinberg. Let's see if we can get closer to him. Boom, and they're surfing through the air, you know. I don't know.
That's what she's worried about. Those
specific viruses. She's smart to worry.
You know.
You know?
Well, no,
I'm
against worrying.
You're against worrying? I don't know whether you're kidding or you're hyperboleing.
No, I'm totally serious. I don't do worrying. You do what you do. You decide what your parameters are of comfort and then execute and see what happens.
What's it like not to have emotions?
I have emotions. I just don't. I don't believe in allowing worry to get revved up.
Hmm. I don't know. That's very interesting. I mean, obviously, there's a saying that you shouldn't worry about things that you have no control over. That's one. Yeah,
but
you know, maxim.
Those are the things people mostly worry about.
You know, the other thing is that fear is something that usually the things you fear will never happen. So mm-hmm. it's irrational. I don't remember that there's like a saying with the letters of fear or whatever. But basically,
point is a valid one that we do spend a lot of time focusing on. Here's one of my sayings: we're fixated on the part of ourselves that's least likely to be a problem. So perfectionists worry that they're not going to be perfect enough, that they're not going to pay enough attention to detail. Well, that's a total, that's ridiculous. There, you've got that one down if you're a perfectionist. Move on to the next problem you have.
That's why a lot of workaholics have a terrible fear that they will be exposed for being lazy. That, that quite often the thing that you obsess on and the thing that you become known for is actually the opposite of how you see yourself. I know that that's a case with me. I often worry about being lazy, that if I'm not mm-hmm. constantly producing or doing something active or making a difference, you know, productive-wise, with purpose, I tend to come down on myself for being lazy.
And so this is why you work every minute. You're just like an emaciated 17-year-old girl looking in the mirror and seeing fat.
That's a way. Yes, I sometimes feel like an emaciated 17-year-old girl, but when I look in the mirror, I see a big fat old guy. So it clears up the problem. But that's yeah. I guess there is a connection there. But you know, you say, you know, you don't worry, but I'm sure that there are things that you're concerned about. Let's just say it's good to be prepared. You know, to take caution, not to get into a situation that's terribly dangerous or where the odds are against you. That's a form of worry, isn't it?
I don't know. I just don't believe in having that engine revving up too high.
Yeah. Well, you are one of the coolest cats, to use a 1950s expression, but it fits. You are one of the coolest cats I've ever met in terms of just your nature. You truly, I believe you when you say you don't worry. You're very cool and calm. You don't panic. And
no, I get better under stress. I love pressure.
Do you?
Yeah, because I tend to be lazy. I'm like the person you worry about being. Not lazy, no. That's the wrong word. Inefficient,
undisciplined.
Yes, huh. I work on the thing I want to work on rather than the thing that needs to be done.
Okay, that's a form of inefficiency, I guess, unless the
exactly.
thing that you're working
yes. For
on
example,
is
the taxes
important.
Go in routinely 6 months late. I do my taxes.
You're a procrastinator?
I don't. Yeah, and I don't, well, on stuff I don't. That doesn't interest me. I hate that I have to do paperwork, that I've got to be trying to figure out things that I don't want to figure out. I want to figure out how the government's ripping us off, not how they're ripping me off. I want the macro on this.
When you were, are you disorganized in terms of clutter and things of that nature?
Pretty much, yeah.
When you were a kid, was your locker in school neat or a pile of garbage?
Oh, I don't. Jeez, that's a
think
tough
about
question.
That.
I don't.
Well,
think
it starts.
Much,
it starts with your
I
locker.
I don't think I went to my locker. It does.
I remember wrestling with my locker every year. At the beginning of school, I would make a vow that this is the year that I'm going to have a neat locker, that I'm not going to have old assignments and paper and garbage and things piling up. That when you open the locker, things fall out on you. And I would, that resolution went down the drain by October. I just always had sloppy lockers. Now, the other day I saw in some magazine a photo of Albert Einstein's desk that was taken right before he died. And it looks
like
my desk.
Yes. So you think you're brilliant now?
No, I think I'm a slob. Actually, no, the truth of the matter is my desk is very neat. But I've wrestled with that idea. I deal with, you know, should you clean up after yourself after you've worked? You know, if you're working in your workshop, you're working in the studio, if you're doing something creative, should you leave papers around? Should you leave materials around? Or should you clean them up when you're done? Or do you just operate where you know where everything is? It's your own filing system, as they say. And if somebody comes along and touches one of your mess, one of the papers or things on your desk that's a mess, you get all upset because it ruins your system. All these things are things people deal with. These are actually very human issues, and I think they reveal things about us psychologically, but I'm not quite sure what, you know.
Well, that's true. They do reveal something, and we don't know what they are and whether they're relevant, and we keep doing the same wrestling match with ourselves over and over.
Right.
I think that's the real human nature. So I wanted to ask you, there's been a lot of controversy in Connecticut, which I'm sure you're aware of, over school sports and the idea of football, and parents are upset because high school kids have been dangled by their elected officials and their policymakers, and they've just found out over the last few days, or last week, I guess, that they're not going to be able to play football. And it's creating a lot of controversy. I wonder if you want to pick a position to fight for.
I have a position.
Play or don't play. You do.
There's very there's grave danger if they play football during the coronavirus era. And it comes from the playing of football. I was telling Michael Kovar, saying people are like upset that their kids might get a disease or the virus playing. They might also get a broken neck. It's ironic that we're talking about football. High school football is I'm going to make a lot of enemies by saying this, but I would not allow my kid to play football.
Well, I think a lot of people over recent years have done that. They push their kids in other directions.
Football is a very, very violent and very dangerous sport. So to me, when I hear people talking about, well, we're not going to have high school football because it's a contact sport and they may get the coronavirus, it's like, well, you know.
That's the least of your worries. That,
exactly. Exactly. Now I happen to like football. And I'm complicated that way. I actually like watching videos of people falling down, and I laugh. They have all over YouTube. They call
them
fails.
Those are funny videos. They're designed. They're proven to make you laugh before you've even seen them.
Right. Exactly. So but then don't you feel guilty laughing at somebody's pain? And
no,
don't you...
I love that. I think that's fine. I think that's fine. Well, the idea is we have, for some reason, why are humans designed like this? We have that funny bone where somebody appearing hapless and suffering by their own affliction, that makes us laugh. And if it's done right, and it's by the fact that it makes us laugh, that means it's made everyone else laugh, which means it makes humans laugh. Why should we feel guilty for being human?
Right. So there are all kinds of activities that entertain us, either make us laugh or just give us a thrill. Watching a couple of guys bang their head, bang their fists into each other's face, and call it a sport, or watching people tackle each other in a football game. And some people just don't like violence. You were talking about Rosalie before, not necessarily now wanting to go to restaurants. I have a problem with my wife. She doesn't like violence. So, she really
can't
doesn't
watch Netflix.
She has problems with, and I'm a big football fan. And, I always hope that when she's watching with me that nobody gets their head knocked off or somebody laying
on
the
field. But wait a sec. Do you tell her that when people are only 3 inches tall, they don't feel the pain?
Yeah. I tell her they love pain. They love pain. Then you come up with all kinds of excuses. First of all, they're getting paid a lot of money to do that. They're millionaires. They love it. Look at all the padding. They feel less pain than we feel just, bumping into the wall. We come up with all these excuses to justify, basically why we are Romans and they're Christians in the Colosseum. I mean,
enjoy watching professional football. I think it's an amazing game to watch. So that's excuse enough for me. Hold on, Michael Harrison. We'll break. We'll promptly return. And we'll talk about more fun stuff coming up on WTIC. WTIC, Michael Harrison here for his weekly visit, not the other unscheduled ones where he takes over somebody's show at the last second and commands all 3 hours of it. Not like that,
in.
Michael.
What was that?
It's what not like that? That today. Just an hour.
Yeah,
you
just
have to
an
try
hour.
To contain yourself.
And you do the heavy lifting. I just sort of respond. I'm in reaction mode. But I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Have you? How do you deal with the 19th anniversary of 9/11? It's not a 20th anniversary. It's not a 15th anniversary. It's overshadowed in terms of the crisis that we're facing today. You don't really talk. You don't really hear talk about, you know, Al Qaeda and ISIS and terrorism, and yet it's the 19th. Not to mention, it's one of those things that's indelibly burned into the minds of people who are, you know, born in the 20th century. Because it was the first major event of the 21st century that we all remember. Mm-hmm. And we all remember what we were doing. But then there are a lot of people, you know, who were in their early 20s or they're, you know, 18, 19. And it was before their time. It's hard to wrap your you know, you and I talk a lot about the passage of time and wrapping your brain around time.
Yeah.
The 19th anniversary of 9/11 in the midst of all this other stuff going on is kind of a, you know, interesting mental process.
Well, I don't like that. That aspect of it I find actually intriguing to talk about. In general, anniversaries don't interest me much, talking about historical events. Mm. You know, because I hear so many people doing it, I feel like it's a disservice to listeners at some point because, you know, a little of it is okay, but we're not all thinking about events that happened in history. And on any given day, you could probably find 1,000 events that might be noteworthy to go back to and focus on. It doesn't mean because they happen on this day that they're of interest, that they're top of mind to talk about. So if possible, I stay away from it. Or I am interested in people's reactions to where we are today compared to 19 years ago and the things we supported, the things that we would do differently in terms of how we reacted to what the government wanted to do. So I'm much more of a hardliner now in terms of my mistrust of government. And I was way more trusting of the Bush administration wanting to go to war and the Patriot Act and all that stuff. I hate that I was complicit in those movements towards allowing big government to oppress us further and take more of our privacies away. So that topic, I look for topics like that inside of the story that stand up on their own.
Right. Well, one of the things about 9/11 that drove me crazy was I was born on 9/11 and not 2001. I was born several years before that, but it's my birthday. And when they started, at first they called it all kinds of things. They operation this and operation that and whatever. And then all of a sudden they just started calling it 9/11. I go, what the heck is this all about? That means from now on, when people ask me, you know, what's your date of birth? I go, 9/11. And they look at you funny because the words 9/11 has a...
means something different.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I got a birthday card from Donald Trump. And it's a Donald Trump talking card making your birthday great again, and it has that you know what eating grin he has.
That's funny.
Standing in front of and it says it's really Donald's voice, and you open it up.
I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday. I would never say in your case that you're fired, so I'll just say you're hired.
Is that fantastic?
That's
turned around
terrific,
to sandwich.
Except he doesn't mention you.
No, it's not. I got an e-card with Shaq, a Shaq in the box card. And, you know, I get a lot of e-cards and he's going, hey, Michael, it's your birthday, Michael. And I'm going, how the hell did he know my name? Which is pretty wild. But this Donald Trump card is great. So I turn it around to see how much it cost. And it says, and I couldn't see it because it's a barcode, but it says right on the bottom of this Donald Trump birthday card, it says made in China, which I find great. And I also have as a gift for my birthday, a Donald Trump talking pen. And it has his head on the top.
Don't play that one yet. Don't play that one yet. We have to break for news. But can we tease the talking pen?
Yeah.
All right. Coming up, it's the Donald Trump talking pen after news on WTIC. Oh, I didn't put that together. This September 11th is also your birthday?
Well, yeah, usually you're stuck with it when you have a birthday. It's every year.
I thought we were just talking about the past. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I was telling Mike during the break that I do not like anybody over 16 years old making a deal or bringing attention to their birthday. And the only reason I did in this case was because, you know, it kind of fits what we're talking
right
about
the topic.
With 9/11 sure. And all that stuff. But had I not gotten my Donald talking pen that includes 8 sayings in addition to my Make Your Birthday Great Again card, I may not have mentioned it at all. But let me see if this works now. Now, if you press his hair, and I haven't opened the packaging because I don't want to open it because someday I'm going to sell it for like $5,000.
Yeah, it loses value.
Right. So, but you can test it by, it says press down on Donald's hair. Talk about disrespect.
Press, really?
That'd be like a, well, whatever. So
could result in violence.
Yeah, and it says it includes 8 sayings. So I'm going to practice my interview technique. So, Mr. President, how do you see your second term unfolding?
I will be the greatest president that God ever created.
Do you think that you can afford to be president?
Look, I'm really rich.
What are you going to do in your second term?
I will build a great, great wall on our southern border, and I will have Mexico pay for that wall.
I'm pressing on your head. What is this fuzzy stuff?
I don't wear a toupee. It's my hair. I swear.
How about your Get Tough on China program?
I love China. I just sold an apartment for $15 million to somebody from China.
What do you think of the level of intelligence in our country?
Our leaders are stupid. Our politicians are stupid.
You like to win, don't you?
We will have so much winning if I get elected that you may get bored with winning.
One more question, Mr. President. How come you're so mean?
I think I am a nice person. People that know me like me.
There you go. There are all 8 sayings from and his real voice in a pen by touching his hair.
Well, what's amazing is how responsive he is to what you're asking. You would think he would get some of them wrong because he wouldn't be paying attention, but he seems very tuned in.
He's a very, very, he's a caring man. He makes you feel that you're the only person in the room. That's what they used to say about Bill Clinton. He could work a room like nobody else. Looks you in the eye. I feel your pain. And
the two-handed handshake. Don't forget that. The second hand clasping the upper forearm.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you know something? Donald Trump, one-on-one in a social situation, is a very personable man.
Is that why you got the birthday card? Because
yes.
You had dinner with him a couple of years ago? That's great.
Yes. Yeah, he likes me.
Well, why? I don't understand why he doesn't call and wish you a happy birthday then.
He's busy. He's taking. He's wishing Kim Jong-un a happy birthday. What could I say?
I thought Kim died. Is he still around?
I don't know. Is that's going to become a joke? You know, is he still? That's like, what was it? Franco is still dead.
Exactly.
Boy, we talk with such disrespect about the leaders of the world. My gosh.
Which is what they deserve.
You're right.
Kind of respect.
Nobody forced these people to become powerful.
I find it funny when everybody gets all riled up because Donald Trump says something that they find out of sync with reality, inappropriate, like the
otherwise called lying.
Cause such a furor. Well, I don't like to use that term because lying is a very specific activity. It requires a willful disregard and suggests something malicious. So most leaders lie about things like when are you, you know, you interview FDR and say, when are you going to attack Japan? And he's not likely to tell you the truth. He's likely to give you something to throw you off the track, and that could include lies, because that's what leaders have to do. As a matter of fact, it's hard to even run for president without being a liar. Forget about actually serving the job. So I don't approve of journalists calling him a liar for what's fairly routine. But I was thinking this morning about if I were having a debate with a liberal, which doesn't happen because they all refuse to talk to me. Mm-hmm. I would say something like, well, did he tell you the truth about Kim Jong-un. He said the world was going to change and there was going to be peace. Now, did he mean that, or was that aspirational and he was trying to create the mood for it? This is the complexity of what leaders do and how they speak.
Yeah, well, I think there's a fine line, maybe not that fine a line, between being a deceitful liar and being diplomatic or mercurial, not to abuse the power of the words of the leader. Sometimes the leader has to be careful what he or she says, because there's always consequences to the words of the leader, whatever the leader might be. So that's why they talk in a very measured manner, you know, my fellow Americans.
Well, that's the excuse that's given for them for being so measured. But Americans got sick of measured, and they elected the opposite. We elected the opposite. Therefore, there is a new standard for being presidential. It used to be
How could you possibly say Americans when only about 40% of Americans are in love with Donald Trump and the other 60% hate him? And I'm not saying that as
say
a pro-Trump or an anti-Trump thing, but how could you possibly say Americans are sick of, you know, measured?
Well, I think that's the swing that went by. In particular, the voters in those swing states that surprised the country by causing Donald Trump to win the Electoral College vote, they were largely people who had voted for Barack Obama. And I think there was a frustration with politicians being guided by consultants and only saying words that had been tested by focus groups and approved by the consultants, and saying sentences and phrases that were written by speechwriters and only speaking in front of a teleprompter. And this is called presidential, to be an utter coward and to only say what you're told to say, what you're allowed to say. And Donald Trump breaks that mold, and he won. And I think the fact that he caused a furor throughout the campaign from day one, he was causing outrage that they thought was going to make it impossible. All the smart people thought was going to make it impossible for him to forget about win the election, even win a primary. So, yeah, I feel confident in saying that there's something about his quirkiness and his abrasiveness and the honesty with which he lies, as opposed to the deceptiveness that the previous presidents have used to lie, that people wanted.
Okay. He should hire you as his press secretary, for crying out loud.
I would do a lot better than
You'd be fantastic.
Whatever blonde is walking down the street.
You know, well, you know, it's not funny how blondes seem to do so well in political media.
Well, especially Trump political media.
Well, Trump, he's a blonde. He's sort of a blonde.
That's right. With frizzy hair. I mean, if you watch that Republican convention, that was a Fox News style blonde fest.
It was.
He even got blondes to be his kids, Trump.
Isn't that amazing? It's true. But now that's really, you know, that's really a whole other discussion about the media and television news. I know there was once I forgot her name off the top of my head, and I don't want to make fun of her or anything, but there was a Fox News channel back in the early days, anchor woman, who did not...
Laurie Due?
No. Laurie Due was a very
beautiful
blonde.
Laurie Due was gorgeous, yeah. She had sparkly lips.
This woman was not the typical Fox News channel or even anchor woman look. And as a result, everybody thought she had to be very intelligent, because if a woman that did not look like a model is on Fox News,
she had to compensate.
She must be brilliant. And then she went and had her face lifted and screwed it all up. She just made herself look maybe better by some kind of standards that I don't necessarily subscribe to. But she went on and she looked more like a television glamour girl or glamour boy. I'm not being sexist. It goes from all the way up and down the line.
Yes. It's a guy thing, too.
And as a result, she lost her credibility and her career went down the drain.
Are you talking about Greta Van Susteren?
Maybe. Perhaps. Well, if the shoe fits.
She did seem to go to Michael Jackson's surgeon for the
plastic surgery. Nobody cared about what she looked like. And all of a sudden she starts with the plastic surgery and it became an issue. And I think
Do you know for a fact that there was an internal problem? Like they believed that the
I don't know for a fact what motivated it, other than it's clearly human nature. I don't think they
that motivated them losing faith in her, that there was a connection with the plastic surgery, because it was she lost her identity. I think it was so dramatic.
I do not have any inside information as to why it happened. I can only speculate in gossip with you.
But I assume, you know, she had the 10 o'clock show, and it was never the most exciting program, I didn't think. And she kind of focused on crime and law type things.
Right. But do you remember from your memory of stuff, because it's now many years ago, do you remember that she had the reputation for she must be smart because she's not good looking? Come on.
No, I don't hang around with people like that, Michael.
Okay. Well, you don't talk like that. You better get out to more restaurants.
There is a wild world that continues to swirl around us. And I think that, you know, I was talking to producer Mike earlier about what is the future of America, because there are these theories going around about how the election, the Democrats are planning to steal the election, and somebody's got this very detailed scenario laid out where Nancy Pelosi becomes president, and by constitutional means, because of certain people stepping out of their positions of responsibility and hanging up the election. And that's all based on the vote being close like it was last time. But now they're using all these paper ballots and early voting. They're essentially instituting new systems of running an election during an election, setting us up for what people think will be a dramatic fall. So let's take a quick break. I'd love to get your reaction to all that when we continue. Michael Harrison is here. Stay with us on WTIC. Michael Harrison, Talkers Magazine, and the host of that wonderful new program we have on WTIC that airs at 2 o'clock on Saturday, called the Michael Harrison something or other. What's it called?
Michael Harrison Wrap, W-R-A-P.
The Wrap.
Like, as in gift wrapping as opposed to rapping. And this weekend's program stars Todd Feinberg. You're the main guest.
You didn't cut me out, huh?
It's really you're very controversial in it. It's good. So you wanted to talk about leaders and stuff. Let me throw a scenario at you that I heard Michael Cohen, the famous lawyer author, has.
Does he still work for you?
Would you hire him?
No. Okay.
So he.
I don't think so. No.
He says here's a plot that he thinks is not beyond the realm of possibility, that if for some reason Trump loses the election between November and January, he resigns and Mike Pence becomes the president. And then Mike Pence, in very Nixonian Gerald Ford fashion, will pardon Trump of any possible crimes so that they can't go after him and arrest him.
OK. And then what does Mike Pence get out of this?
A lifetime of, on one hand, being able to say he's was president of the United States, and a lifetime of some type of controversial disgrace. I don't know. What does he get out of it?
Well, I mean, that's sort of the it's a really fascinating theory until you get to that question, I think. And then it falls apart.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think it's possible. I mean, it's possible.
It sounds like a Michael Cohen kind of scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael Cohen was just riding up in the right elevator at the right time and ran into Trump. I mean, it's just, you know, I just don't see him having the level of notoriety and, you know, where he's been in life as a result of, you know, his
but
marriage.
he was a fan. I was just reading the other day about how he lived in he was in love with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And lived in a Trump apartment and kind of shaped himself into a character who could be hired by Trump. It's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. He set himself up to be discovered. And now...
He probably went up and down that elevator a few hundred times until Trump was finally on it the right ride.
Hey, look, some people are very, very obsessive and very, you know, compulsive when it comes to getting ahead or meeting somebody or, you know, trying to put themselves in the, you know, the frame of reference that can give them an opportunity. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him. But you were going to say some things about Nancy Pelosi becoming president.
Well, no, I was just asking you if you'd heard these theories or other theories like them.
No, she's third in line. You know, she's third in line. It's not impossible that she could be president. It could happen. You know, everybody's just human. Everybody is vulnerable. Anything could happen.
But I think it points to the level of stress that the country feels about what happens to succession right now if it's viewed again as a tie election and it comes down to a court ruling or something like that. I don't think either side is prepared to accept a close loss.
This is going to be the next crisis. We face a severe crisis if it's a close election. We face a severe crisis even if it's not a close election. Neither side is about to say, okay, let's come together now. There's so much ill will, so much distrust, so much anger that we're going to have to cross that bridge when we get to it. You know, it's like one crisis a day. How much can you handle? But this is definitely an issue that a lot of people are concerned about.
Are you among them?
Yes. I am concerned about it.
I think it's hard
don't take
to
stability
imagine.
For granted.
Yeah. And it's wise not to. It's an unusual thing to have.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we tend to think of stability and a consumer lifestyle and the things that we like and our comforts and hot and cold running water, electricity. You know, we tend to think of these as some type of an entitlement. The world is a very, very dangerous place. And being human is a very, very vulnerable position. So, I don't take... stability for granted, and I'm not walking around worried. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not paranoid, but I certainly am aware that peace, stability, good times, health, nice weather, forests that are not on fire. You know, this is a good thing. We should always
order.
Be grateful. Thanksgiving. You know.
Yes, order is a beautiful thing, and it's hard to acquire, and I suspect easily lost. And we seem to be in the process of it spinning away from us.
Well,
Michael Harrison, that's a
jolly
note to end this week on. And I thank you so much for being here. We'll be listening at 2 o'clock tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Todd. Be well.
All righty, that's Michael Harrison. You can hear him tomorrow at 2, and I guess I make an appearance after all.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.